Since the first waves of colonization in Palestine, there has been a conscious intent to splinter the Palestinian national identity into a patchwork of fragmented, dispersed territories that evolve as distinct social formations. This is clearly illustrated in the various categories that comprise the Palestinian people. Palestinian refugees, now the largest body of refugees in the world, Palestinians who remained on their land in 1948 and later became citizens of the Israeli state, those scattered in the cantons of the West Bank, and, most recently, others isolated in the Gaza Strip. All these groups of people constitute the Palestinian nation, but the denial of this unity has been the overriding logic of colonization since before 1948. This fragmentation has been made possible by military power. Israel forcibly prevents Palestinian refugees from returning to their land, divides the West Bank and Gaza Strip from each other, places administrative restrictions on the movement of Palestinian citizens of Israel into the occupied territories, and completely controls movement in the West Bank itself. At the same time, and this is a crucial point that often goes unstated, dispossession and expulsion of Palestinians from their land continues in a slow-motion manner, confirming that al-Nakba is ongoing. But fragmentation is not solely a spatial process. It necessarily rests upon a temporal disruption. The assault on history itself becomes an integral feature of how colonization functions, with the Palestinian experience dehistoricized and reduced to a recent narrative that accepts the results of fragmentation as permanent and given. It becomes possible to speak of quote-unquote Gazans, for example, around 70% of whom are actually refugees from 1948, with no reference to how this category was constructed through the forcible fragmentation of the Palestinian people as a whole, first during al-Nakba, and then through the separation of the West Bank and Gaza Strip. Or to speak of, quote, empty spaces, unquote, in the West Bank, with no mention of the dispossession of one-fifth of the population in 1967. Because these categories are accepted as given, legitimized as the focus of political negotiations, financial aid packages, and development strategies, they continue to be reproduced. This process is normalized and sustained through the operational practices of foreign governments, NGOs, and a myriad of development agencies, thus providing a materiality to Israeli power. At the same time as Israeli colonization was a military project aimed at the fragmentation and destruction of Palestinian identity, it also changed the Palestinian economy. In the West Bank, this has meant a type of, quote, hothouse capitalism, unquote, in which the power of the occupation generated many of the same processes of social transformation noted in previous chapters. Rural inhabitants were dispossessed from the land and forced to join migrant labor markets. A capitalist class developed through subcontracting and privileged trade relationships with the occupation. In more recent years, Palestinian policymakers eagerly embraced a neoliberal model of development in close partnership with IFIs. This is neoliberalism under occupation, one driven by an identical logic and reinforcing the same coincidence of poverty and enrichment as seen elsewhere in the region. In this sense, there is very little that is unique in the types of economic policies that are today being implemented by the PA. They have been the standard fare of governments across the Middle East for at least two decades. Palestinian acquiescence to this process did not come about simply due to the corruption of individual leaders, misplaced political decisions, or an unfavorable international context. Indispensable to explaining the trajectory of the last 45 years are these shifts that took place in the Palestinian political economy, in which the development of capitalism in the West Bank and Gaza Strip was accelerated by the whip of Israeli colonization, ensuring the ancillary integration of these areas into the Israeli economy. The profound transformation of Palestinian class structure that occurred in lockstep with Israel's colonization underpins Palestinian submission to Oslo and the nature of the PA. The specificity of the neoliberal experience of Palestine lies in the total subjugation of the population by an occupying force, and the attempts of more than six decades to fragment and disperse a nation of people from their homeland. Neoliberalism works to reinforce this atomization, turning people away from collective struggle and toward individualized consumption as mediated through finance. It has produced mass impoverishment alongside the enrichment of a tiny layer of Palestinians that acts as the interlocutor with Israeli and foreign capital. A society constructed along these principles weakens the capacity of the Palestinian people to resist. Most importantly, it means that the question of Palestine cannot be reduced to a purely quote-unquote humanitarian issue or simply an issue of national liberation. It is an essential component of the broader struggle against the uneven development and control of wealth across the Middle East. Capitalist development has always acted to consolidate and deepen Israel's power over Palestine, generating a layer of Palestinian society that stands against the interests of most of the population. In this sense, understanding and confronting the political economy of Palestinian capitalism is very much entwined with the struggle of national liberation and return. The success of one fully depends on the success of the other.